dreaming. On my bed, my limbs I lay. It hath not been my use to pray with moving lips or bended knees, but silently, by slow degrees, my spirits I to God compose. In humble trust, mine eyelids close, in reverential resignation. No wish described, no thought expressed, only a sense of supplication, a sense o'er all my soul impressed, that I am weak, but not unblessed, since in me, all around me, everywhere, eternal strength and wisdom are. But late last night, I cried aloud in anguish and in agony, upstarting from the fiendish crowd of shapes and thoughts that tortured me. A lurid light, a trampling throng, sense of intolerable wrong, and whom I scorned, those only strong. Thirst of revenge, the powerless will, still baffled and yet burning still. Desire with loathing strangely mixed, on wild or hateful objects fixed. Fantastic passions, maddening brawl, and shame and terror over all. Deeds to be hid that were not hid, which all confused, I could not know whether I suffered or I did, since all was guilt, remorse, and woe. My own or others, all the same, life-stifling fear, soul-stifling shame. So, two nights passed. The night's dismay saddened and stunned the coming day. Sleep, the wide blessing, seemed to me distemper's worst calamity. The third night, when my own loud scream awaked me from the fiendish dream, o'ercome with sufferings strange and wild, I wept as I had been a child. And having thus, by tears, subdued mine anguish to a milder mood, such punishments, I said, were due to nature's deepliest stained with sin, foray and tempesting anew the unfathomable hell within, the horror of those deeds to view, to know and loathe, yet wish and do. Such griefs with such men well agree, but wherefore? Wherefore fall on me? To be beloved is all I need. And whom I love indeed. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Yes, greetings, dear fiends. The other night, or last week, I did a show here, but I don't know if anyone but the angels heard it. because of the red button, blue button controversy. You see, when I looked on the desktop here, they were concealed. You couldn't find the red or blue button. And when I posted the show, it seemed like the show from the week before. But I've gone through several screens and I found the red button, and it is most certainly pushed. And so, here where the fire is mortal, I push on. I, Dr. Howland Owl, sustain some hopes of being visited by K-Rob, who I attempted to contact without success tonight. And yet, on his nightly wanderings, he has been known to step by and tell us of the world and all the things that are happening in it, and of his special projects and secret performances. Such a one occurred not too long ago, the Black Christmas, the satanic invert of the Christmas celebration, which he is a signal and important part of. I myself was at a party and could not attend, but it is always worth attending to see full-blown K-Rob and hear the sounds as well as see the fantastic images which he presents at such an appropriate occasion. Tomorrow, we intend to put on Relodeo. And not only will the usual Relodeo show take place, if all is as it should be, but a special edition will be added. Not an edition, but an addition of a person, and that person is none other than Michael J. Pepe. Yes, we've had our troubles reeling him in through power outages and outrages, but reliable opinion suggests that he will be present on this history-making occasion. And there will be the usual bits to glean from the torrent of expressions, words, symbols, reminiscences, and discussions of presidential assassinations and the island of Guam and all of that. It's going to happen. So, fervent fans, please make a check in your appointment book. If you possess something so solid and so unevanescent and digital and likely to be swept away by a hacker or a storm of unrelated fidgeting widgets, we know that there is a path to that door, which we hope to illuminate so that everyone may come and enjoy the colloquium of our symposium there and on other programs of this nature. Early this morning on KPFA 94.1 FM, the Puzzling Evidence Show live took place, featuring Puzzling Evidence and myself, Dr. Howland Owl. And so you see, despite the convulsions and irregularities in the fabric of the world and the strange mutations which have occurred of direction and accountability in the recent terrifying years, there is still a thing going on. On behalf of the Church of the Subgenius, its friends and fellow travelers, and as long as it may be done, Etherettes and Rocket Rookies, for you it shall be made a priority. Yes, for you especially. You, our beloved audience. So, as we are wont to say, settle back, relax, and enjoy our feature presentation.
It's John Hill running after the CD player theme. He was sitting in his car outside.
You're not going to catch me.
It's like Eddie Murphy, you know, swinging around the back of the cigarette truck. And,
right. It's got the left of
roof, baby. Now, there's a cinematic reference.
It's Hal. It's Radio Valencia.
The Radio Valencia cop. The Radio Valencia lawyer. The Radio Valencia cocktail waitress. And the guy who puts together cats and dogs in weird ways. The mad scientist guy.
Experimenting on helpless life forms.
I forget what we talked about the other night.
Perhaps it was...
You don't need to worry about it. It's on VJ Pussycat's Endless... No, maybe she wasn't.
Maybe she wasn't.
Perhaps it was how Haga could weep stones. The tears of laughter, or the tears of sorrow, or of the toads in the rice that killed the poppy cockalorum and the cockahoopa trice.
He's always strung out, but he goes to the local hot dog shack or hamburger.
Hot dog.
He's like, he tries to get, he like wimpies his way to a burger. Mm. You know.
I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger.
Here, have your burger. Just go away. You're holding up business. So he's like, all right, you know, he always is happy to get his burger.
Last night we watched Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens.
We did?
Was that on, that was on one of those...
I didn't watch that damn show.
ESP TV or cathode.
Yeah. It was cathode, right. Because they were having, like, titties.
Big tit, underpants.
So much stuff to watch. Why would one watch that? I'd rather watch Orgy of the Dead by Edward Wood.
Expanded the things from there.
If one wishes to see semi-naked women cavorting in a graveyard, Orgy of the Dead is pretty good. And you get Criswell also.
Funeral?
Uh-oh. Death of this show.
That's your funeral.
The new version. But you gotta say goodbye to the old fur, so I hired her to do this.
Satin. That's your funeral. That's your funeral. Large enough to wear your hat in. That's your funeral. That's your funeral.
Average people, ordinary people.
Visualize the earth descending on you, clod by clod.
California.
You can't come back when you're buried underneath the sun.
No.
At the beer, we'll drink a toddy to the body, beautiful. That's your funeral, no one else's funeral. That's your funeral.
Hands on hand.
There'll be horses with coal black plumes. They bear the bodies to go.
Whoa.
Or what's the one that is not going to be
where is Marge?
Bad Humphrey Bogart
in the funeral procession
guys
with their features fixed in a suitable expression
at the movies
for a born undertaker's mute.
Frederick March.
You can see him in a black silk suit.
In the remake, I think it was Gary Oldman who got dumped on the lawn. Wasn't there a remake a few years ago with the same thing?
With Gary Oldman, yes. Now, in the classic, it was Humphrey Bogart being mean to Frederick March. But in Knock on Any Door. But the remake featured Gary Oldman
the old movie Knock on
as the bad guy.
The criminals take over an all-American family.
They're driving around looking for a place to hide out, and they see the kid's bike lying on its side. And the father told him again and again, don't leave your bike on its side in the front yard. But the criminals see it and say, this is perfect. They've got kids here. They'll do whatever we say. And so they take over the house and brutally treat the family and menace the sexy teenage daughter. And, well, you just have to see the movie.
Bicycle. We'll take that one. And my mother, who was watching, would say, see, that's the sort of thing that you could get us into trouble by doing, by leaving your bicycle.
Always something that I did.
As if Humphrey Bogart's going
to
come and take over
Aunt
Bertha, our...
Then I would have been kidnapped.
Humphrey could have taken over our house. Well, it was a choice place.
Know, there are all these near things where they're almost able to tell some neighbor or a policeman or something, but something always happens and eventually it's...
Yes, the suspense is screwed up to the sticking place.
Horrible fight between the dad and the criminal guy, who was Humphrey Bogart in the first movie, and I believe in the remake is Gary Oldman.
But who's the good, virtuous dad in the remake? Who dumps Gary Oldman on the lawn after beating him up?
Because there's lots of humiliation for him in the movie, too. You know, they put him all through Dark Night of the Soul, and there's always the threat
that can
of
happen.
Rape looming over the teenage
daughter. Can even happen to me on the way to Berkeley. All sorts of evil characters are in the BART cars. Irrational, violent.
In the 90s with Kyle MacLachlan and...
I think it was somebody like Liam Neeson who was the good dad. But it's easy enough to look up. For those of you who have a portable device that connects you with the accumulated wisdom of the planet.
Kevin Costner thing, but the
Kevin Costner, oh no, I don't think so. No,
makes that interesting.
That simply wouldn't work out. Although he did play a serial killer in...
Wig. She apparently died. I didn't note when, but I'm now reading about her funeral.
Yes, Charlotte Mallard Swig took a deep dive, as a mallard does. Only unlike a mallard, she did not come up. But of course, she was a social light of San Francisco, and in fact was called the Chief of Protocol. When everyone crowded on the Golden Gate Bridge until it sagged with the human weight and almost broke, she jumped up on top of a car and attempted to direct everybody with a bullhorn and was completely ignored. But at least she tried to do something, and she was being helpful. She was no Gorgon, no Medusa. And speaking of the Gorgon... As drear and barren as the glooms of death, it lies, a windless land of livid dawns, nude to a desolate firmament, with hills that seem the gibbous bones of the mummied earth, and plains whose hollow face is riveled deep, with gullies twisting like a serpent's track, the leprous touch of death is on its stones, where, for his token visible, the head is throned upon a heap of monstrous rocks, rough mounded like some shattered pyramid in a thwartly cloven hill ravine that seems the unhealing scar of huge Tellurian wars. Her lethal beauty, crowned with twining snakes that mingle with her hair, the Gorgon reigns. Her eyes are clouds wherein black lightnings lurk. Yet even as men that seek the glance of life, the gazers come, where, coiled and serpent swift, those levins wait. As round an altar base her victims lie, distorted, blackened forms of postured horror, smitten into stone, time caught in meshes of eternity, drawn back from dust and ruin of the years, and given to all the future of the world. The land is claimed of death. The daylight comes half strangled in the changing webs of cloud that unseen spiders of bewildered winds weave and unweave across the lurid sun in upper air. Below, no zephyr comes to break with life the circling spell of doom. Long vapor serpents twist about the moon, and in the windy murkness of the sky, the guttering stars are wild as candle flames that near the socket. Thus the land shall be, and death shall wait, throned in Medusa's eyes, till in the irremediable webs of night the sun is snared, and the corroded moon a dust upon the gulfs, and all the stars rotted and fallen like rivets from the sky, letting the darkness down upon all things. We heard The Pains of Sleep by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and just now Medusa by Clark Ashton Smith, if anyone needed to be informed.
Mallard, Swig, you know, all these people who really changed the look of everything in San Francisco are now gone. Head of what did they call her? The head of protocol?
She was called the chief of protocol.
I mean, give me a break, Ski.
Yeah, but that's the hurricane world.
When everyone crowded under the Golden Gate Bridge and then
I mentioned this.
Off, you know, and the bridge started to sag from the weight of all the people. Charlotte Mallard Swig jumped up on a car and tried to direct everybody with a bullhorn. And of course, it was completely
useless. But nobody could move. The humanity was packed in too strongly.
They were really unable to move. There's no use telling people to back up unless they all back up at the same
moment. Okay, everybody, back up.
But I most resent the changes to the museums in Golden Gate Park, which used to cost $5 and a free day at the beginning of the month, and now cost $40 and a free day. What's that?
Yes, well, they have to make some money with all the budget slashing by Senator Freddy Krueger.
Every interesting thing there, and made it about how Gavin Newsom wants you to use a low-flow toilet.
Well, how conservative.
How I went there the other night. Day and Flash and Dana are working on some stuff. I thought it was fun to hang out with them and get Flash's very strong opinions, which he has, about John Law and
about the state of things.
And the changeover. He said they called him and said, "Well, we decided that you get to come to Burning Man, and we're not, and you can even rent trailers to people, although it's illegal for anyone else to do it." And he said he felt, "Oh, that's too bad." He was looking forward to not doing it, you know. And now this great honor has been laid on him.
If it wasn't for the honor,
but that means he'll be
Klingon honor
at the camp, at Art Car Camp.
Art car.
They're not selling coffee anymore in Center Camp Cafe. Not selling lemonade because
you get free coffee.
Because of cups, you can't.
Well, that's what they say. So, they say it would be moot.
So, pour the hot coffee in my little hands.
Actually,
well,
they don't want to pay the baristas.
Some of us do, and it's a bitter pill, but you can't get iced coffee now. It used to be possible to
swallow with a dusty glass of water, that bitter pill.
It was Ranger, and I got those for free, and I'd always get the chai, the cold chai.
Or mocha.
A little of the old chai, sir.
No baristas, no lattes, no line, just hippies doing their stuff.
Well, speaking of hippies, who is it who's complaining about Burning Man here? I don't do it. I suck it up. I take what abuse is sent my way, although last year was really kind of the limit for that. But I survived. I am back here on the show. So take all that cum grano salis, as we say.
Respect the earth. It's made of extruded petrol.
Run a drone shot along the road to Burning Man. All the motorhomes going
right,
1 mile an hour.
Idling in the dust.
Man, it is cold in here.
Last days, while inches, you know, 45
awfully
feet
cold.
And then
it was certainly cold this morning. What does it need? What does it require here in the studio?
Hug you and then go through everything.
Now I know what it always requires for me.
They would. They stone you when you're trying to go home. They'll stone you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. Well, they'll stone you when you're walking on the street. They'll stone your seat. They'll stone you when you're walking on the floor. They'll stone you when you're walking to the door. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. They'll stone you when you're at the breakfast table. They'll stone you when and able. They'll stone you when you're trying to make a buck. They'll stone you and then they'll say good luck. Yeah, but I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. So all alone. Everybody
snuck Jody in one ear. What was that?
Yes, I know. Well, but nobody would suspect that a ranger would do it.
The guy actually looked behind, you know, just...
Rangers aren't corrupt.
Greater-like, yeah, the greater-like person.
He looked at the lump in the back.
He still looked at the lump in the back. I was insulted, you know, with my little cute ranger car.
But and the lump didn't move.
Right, and she was so small that she just looked like a bunch of sleeping bags and stuff. And then she went off like Sven, I think, that same year.
Reminisces about the old days at Burning Man.
Well, now, wait a minute. It wasn't the later year when Father was there, the one year when Father was there, the one where Pepe was there, and Will broke from RV. Right, yeah.
Right, we all remember that. Classic special moment. They brought potato chips and cookies, but they didn't bring enough food to eat. You know, food. They brought what bachelors bring, thinking they were going to spend the entire festival crunching chips and chewing on crackers and cookies.
Right, well, Father got so tired of being there that he took the huge beams which we used to anchor the drive-in theater, and he just slung them in the back, and as the thing moved around, they crashed into cabinets and slid over the floor.
And Philo had not insured the RV.
Not gone the extra $50 for the insurance.
Yes, that's right.
They just wanted to hush him up.
They did a lot of damage to that RV. He drove over a concrete median. But when he got back to the rental place, he drew himself up and became the aggrieved southern white man, complaining about how everything was broken. And they offered him a discount on another rental. 'Cause that's just the way it is. Well, folks, you're listening to the Soi des Enchanteurs. Ask Dr. Hal Show. Live on radio. Self-described. From Phineas Narco, he made an oblique reference to a comment I made years and years ago on the Puzzling Evidence show, and I spoke of a tiny insect known as the Pronemobius smithii. But he remembered. You know, that's gratifying to one who worries if all this effort simply streams out into the noise of the universe, signal though it may be. The signal to noise ratio is certainly heavily biased in favor of the universe. But as long as there's one humanoid who remembers the path we took, then that makes us a more substantial presence in that swirling infinity of chaos. All right, everybody. You're listening to... Ouch! Damn it. You're listening to the Ask Dr. Hal Show. Live on radio. I have
to attend to a momentary emergency here. There, all taken care of. Do my listeners recognize the old tune, Three Blind Mice? Of course, in this version, it's called Wiggle Tail. By Google Renee. Ask Dr. Hal, and what will happen? Well, if we only had a set-up studio phone, you know, you could do it with the KPFA show by calling their age-sanctified number. But here, we have the equipment, but characteristically, it's just not hooked up. At least I didn't fail to press the unspeakable red button this time. I managed to locate it by sifting through various screens, and sure enough, some little finger had depressed it in the past. I needed to do nothing, and I will do nothing. I will not press the blue button when this show is over, because enough is too much. It's hard enough to do this show. Why go through this humiliating, embarrassing ritual? Oh, well, I suppose I shouldn't go on this way. It's time for joy, for laughter, life, and love, to kick up one's heels and look hopefully along the length of the new year, which stretches into the distance unseen. Creosote and, for example, Jay Ivanovich in Tucson, he lost his fruit store when a fire started about midnight. When the alarm sounded, the town men rushed to douse the fire with their collapsible leather buckets. That's all they had. There was no newfangled fancy fire engine out in the back of beyond.
It was a territory.
They placed a ladder on the building wall, filled the buckets, and passed them up to the men situated along the ladder.
Arizona was the last state to be admitted
on what burning
to the lower 48.
Yes, that didn't end well.
It was a territory until then.
But that didn't necessarily mean pioneers had to do away with some of the comforts and small pleasures of everyday life.
Well, that may be or may not be, but I do feel it is time to answer some questions. Yes, this is the Ask Dr. Hal Show, and I, Dr. Hal and Owl, do answer questions. You could send them in if you happen to know the address of this place, which I have given out before, but don't have near me conveniently to read off. Oh well, there's always something. Or you could ask the question on the chatterbox, or you could send me in the U.S. mail such a question. And here is one from Dr. Penny, our great old friend and fan, who sends Christmas greetings and pictures of forest animals improbably dressed in green outfits with striped scarves fluttering in the wind, skating on the pond, and such felicitous thoughts these inspire. But enclosed is a question, and I think I see where it is. The question that I'm about to answer. And it comes accompanied by a generous donation, as if it needed to. But I, Dr. Howland Owl, am grateful just the same. And here we go with our question. Are you ready for the significance, for the strangeness of this question? Dear Dr. Hal,
One thing which has puzzled me is, when X Day comes, what will happen to all the people in the inner earth? Much thanks, Dr. Penny. Well, Dr. Penny, you could cavalierly say, these people inside the earth are already aliens, as they might be considered to our view, though of course they are terrestrial. They inhabit Tellus, the Tellusphere. Still, you know, it's a funny thing that science does acknowledge that if you could weigh everything that dwells inside the Earth at once on some cosmic super scale and balance it against everything which lives on the outside of the Earth, the inner world critters would outweigh in mass and bulk the outside world critters. Anyway, I suppose some of you saw the movie Iron Sky, and perhaps even the sequel, where they do go into the inner world, where weird quasi-reptilian humans, including Sarah Palin, governor of Alaska, ride triceratops and other creatures. These are the inhabitants of the inner earth, the hollow earth, from whose darkness issues forth the Nazi hell creatures and other dwellers of the abyss. Well, you could say they have to fend for themselves when everything else is burning and frizzling, or what is worse, de-resolving somehow, turning into undifferentiated bits of matter. That's another thing these exists can do, and perhaps they don't even do it themselves. Perhaps it is exaptive, a side effect of their presence. We are in the hands not of engineers, but of idealists, with a very strong version of what the universe should be like. So what happens to these inner-earth creatures, these humanoids? I suspect that they have a way out also. Perhaps some of the space vessels, which according to the prophecy of sacred scribe Ivan Stang, will arrive, these may facilitate the removal of the inner-earth characters. And what does that imply? Are they going to come and burrow inside the new world that we are traveling to? Well, it takes a long time to get to where one finally gets in the new world. If anyone is familiar with my exhaustive diagram in the second book of the Subgenius, The Undescended Testicle of the Church, Revelation X, the Bob Apocryphon. So I have that diagram shows Subgenius heaven and hell, and it also shows what happens when the Xists pick you up, what happens when you get to Planet X. It's a very informative diagram. I took a long time to draw because every step and stage is illustrated, you see, and I was able to put in the hell section some irritating Subgenius fans who borrowed money from me and never returned it. But let's just say that these inner world creatures, then they may not be reptoids involved in some bizarre conspiracy, they may just be minding their own business. But still, I wish them well. I wish everyone well. I just hope that that there be no additional controversy about this matter. Because why make enemies unnecessarily, as Voltaire said on his deathbed when the priest was trying to get him to renounce Satan? In the giant RV, all the beer should be free. I believe that
and the engine shall never boil over.
Perhaps I'm confusing that one with an earlier one where I did drive one that overheated and I did have to run water on the radiator. You know what happens when your vehicle overheats. If it's a traditional internal combustion engine.
It's Rusty Rebar and his crew.
Yeah, what about him?
The spy was indignant about it.
He's got squelette in his garage.
He unnecessarily endangered all our lives. And it was a terrible expedition leave.
No, he wasn't so bad. After all, we survived, did we not?
How did your lives almost end?
Well, there was something awful about the one vehicle, which was called...
The Open Wound.
It had a very disrespectful name. I can't remember what it was called.
The Open Wound.
But it had electrical problems even before it got to Burning Man.
It had originally said Open Road on it, and he changed it to say Open Wound.
So we were driving forward through a dust storm with me sticking a flashlight out the window. And
that was the only way we could see.
This is a disgrace. You know, but we had to get to where we were going.
That's right. We couldn't use what we didn't have.
It was called the Open Wound. Because it had been called the Open Road, but the letters had been changed around. And
yes,
and
I do.
You know that skeleton you gave me?
Squelette.
Squelette, it said, was her name on the box.
Poor Squelette.
We would always arrange Squelette to sit in a chair by the side of the road and be waving it.
By our mailbox,
by
yes.
The mailbox, we
did wave at people driving in.
Distinguished our cam. And then we added to that, we had these skeleton cats and dogs
skeleton.
That would be there and would be activated when somebody went by. Oh.
Them bones.
Now he's
gonna
still got well
yeah.
In his garage, I think. I think he went to the non-official Burning Man.
Hey, guys and gals, chicks and cats, time to listen to more of the Ask Dr. Hal Show live on radio. We have a full show for you this evening, and possibly may even see K-Rob if the gods are kind. Did you know that Betty Page, the famous model, worshipped seven gods? Keep listening to this show, and you'll hear a lot more information like that. You smart Alex, I see your question on the screen about how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood. You know, once I was leaving X Day, Stang was driving, and most unfortunately, we ran over and killed a woodchuck on that occasion. You know, the woodchuck, scientifically described as Marmotus monax, is otherwise called a groundhog. And there is a superstition that if he sees his shadow before a certain turn of the calendar, it will predict a long and arduous winter. But this woodchuck didn't have a chance. You know, kindly Ivan Stang would never hit an animal if he could avoid it. But I'm telling you, he didn't give us a chance. Anyway, perhaps someone has read the paper I wrote on this particular subject called Coordinated Casting Motions in Marmotus Monax, which was answering the question, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? The last phrase is extremely important because, as it turns out, the woodchuck is not very well designed for throwing anything, wood chips or pieces of soil or stones. What it can do is push these things behind it, but it cannot cast them or throw them. Of course, no one ever said in the old adage that the woodchuck had to be facing you when it could chuck as much wood it could chuck, if it could chuck the wood. And we have established that in its own way it could chuck the wood. But then again, are we talking about a specific time frame or the total amount, the added together aggregate of wood and other items over a lifetime of this big buck-toothed rodent-like, oh boy, if I could just get my hands... Oh well, if the wood chips or wood fragments, and they would have to be fragments, were placed within reach of the forepaws of Marmotus, particularly its digging claws, then as much as you put in the creature's reach could be ejected, and that would be the amount, which would be the answer to your question. But the creature is a being of flesh and blood, susceptible to nervous shock, and to being tired, as well as one might be flinging wood at some honky, you know, for some long time. So the deal has to be, as much as the stamina of the woodchuck in question, multiplied by the amount of wood objects, I assume from trees in every case, so it would be possible to reach a theoretical mathematical approximation which could be written as a formula. Thus, let W equal... Wait a moment. I can't... Nobody can see this. Well, forget it. It could throw a whole lot of wood, all right? But not in the way we think of as throwing, like standing and moving your arm forward. No, this is squatting and moving the four claws backward to scatter whatever is in their way, ideally fragments of wood, tree bark, or what have you, the droppings of a woodpecker, who can say... All is possible through the mysterious operations of nature.
Drop in next door. And
how did you make out?
So I just, what do? I just talk to them.
Just tell them that want to go to
make out.
That's all we do on the show.
What should I say? Tell me what to say.
It's just talk.
To the makeup.
Because you don't want to. It's the last makeup room in town.
It's the happening
show. So get your hand to that bowl of Fritos and call.
Give them what they want.
All right. If that's the case, Columbia, the gem of the ocean, the home of the brave and the free, the shrine of the patriot's devotion, our world offers homage to thee. Thy mandates make heroes assemble, when liberty's form comes in view. Thy banner makes tyranny tremble, three cheers for the red, white and blue, three cheers. Cheers for the red, white and blue, three cheers for the red, white and blue. Thy banner makes tyranny tremble, three cheers for the red, white and blue, when war winged its wide desolation and threatened the land to deform. The ark then freedom's foundation, Columbia rode safe through the storm, with the garlands of victory about her, as so proudly she bore her brave crew. The Union forever, three cheers for the red, white and blue,
blue. Three cheers for the red, white, and blue. White and blue. Three cheers for the red, white, and blue. Her banner makes tyranny tremble. Three cheers for the red, white, and blue. Paladin. Paladin, paladin, where do you roam? Paladin, paladin, far, far from
home. These are trademark-free quotes now, yeah,
from trademark Gunderson. It's K-Roborated.
Only K-Rob can K-Roborate.
Ritos, some computer glitch will
chili cheese.
This
Ritos.
Is the I'll do you too, Sean.
Now you could do everyone at the makeout room.
And how would that make out?
Late night radio people. See, there's a delay. And it's confusing to your mind. But use your mic as a radio.
I never hear the delay. Because
use your phone as a tape recorder.
Speakers that I call
and use your phone as a microphone? Yeah.
A phone as a microphone.
That's the old over-the-edge slogan. It's all about
how about a microphone drop? Microphone.
Did you listen to the Dawn soundtrack, by the way? Dawn.
No, I haven't yet.
Which soundtrack?
There's an
I haven't
Indian
listened to any
name.
Of the files. I took like about half.
Oh, that's like a gazillion. Yeah.
Did you say piles or files?
No, there's an Indian movie called Dawn. You can see parts of it on YouTube. Maybe the whole thing on YouTube.
Oh, right. Dawn I'm movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the one that the documentary.
Oh no!
Like
yeah.
But
yeah,
in your brain.
But it's yeah, like no. Dawn.
And every time he goes into Dawn, there's choruses of Dawn, 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 Dawn.
All right, right.
And lots of good Dawn quotes. And no, I'm too smart for you. Yeah, I just figured if you ever did a Dawn show,
right,
that will help you a lot.
But not a Dawn Trump show.
That would be his son, right? I mean, you'd say informally Dawn.
Dawn Trump Jr. Yeah.
DJ TJ.
Don Donaldo.
Or D. Yeah, Don Jr. Trump Jr.
Donald Duck.
There he is now.
Well, I don't know if I have it.
Uh-oh.
COVID?
Yeah. You want to stand over there, please?
Now, Michael Pepe.
Be quiet.
Thank you. Don't tell Michael Pepe to be quiet.
Yes, I see.
Proceed, Mr. Pepe.
Yeah, thank you. All right, that's enough.
Yes.
You must remember this.
You must go at the playground, parks, or zoo. Be sure to
a frito
ask
is still a frito.
Along with you.
The child murder case also inspired the making of a second film.
Well, feed him too many Fritos, and it's a clear case of homicide.
A Fritophilia.
Munchin', munchin' Fritos. Munchin', crunchin', munchin', chewin', chewin', gulpin', munchin', swallowin', munchin', munchin'. Munch a bunch of Fritos, corn chips. Munch a bunch of Fritos, corn chips.
Partner, you just
want
the world's biggest
thing. You said a mouthful. Munch.
It's not polite to smack your lips, but you can't help it with Fritos, corn chips. Munch a bunch of Fritos, corn chips. You know where they come from? You know where Fritos corn chips come from? Buffalo. No, not those critters. Buffalo, New York. I was shown the Frito plant where those things are churned out in an incredible quantity and sent all across America and the world. Now with new chili cheese Fritos. Shadrach. Shadrach.